Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. It is February the 12th, and this is Through the Eyes of the Black Woman with your host, Salita, on the Say Your Peace Radio Network. And I am so happy February is here, and we have the Black History Month going on. We also have Valentine's Day. So what I did was I did a combination of both. We're going to talk about love and we're going to talk about Black history. So tonight I wanted to go through some Black history stuff. I hope everyone out there is enjoying themselves. I hope you ones who are married or have a significant other, that you treat them very, very nice. That's what I want. I want you to treat them very, very nice. Last night, first let's start with Saturday night, we had Tisha Hill on here, we then had, last night we had Valerie Coleman on, and these women were great, awesome, awesome books, awesome conversation, and I mean, that's why I said I love what I do here. This is who I am. I've tried to stray away from this and try to go in another direction, but I realize this is what I like doing. Hearing myself talk. But anyway, if you want to call in any comments or anything, you can call in at 347-677-1749. That's 347-677-1749. And what I want to do right now, because like I said, it's a combination of both, Black history and love. Black love, basically, is what I'm trying to say. What I want to do is I want to play some music for you, and then we'll come back and we're going to discuss some Black history. Okay? So, we got a little Billy Paul here. So, sit back and relax. This is Through the Eyes of the Black Woman on the Say Your Peace Radio Network, and we shall return.
Mrs.
Mr. Jones. Mr. Jones, Mr. Jones, Mr. Jones. We got a thing going on. We both know that it's wrong, but it's much too strong to let it go now. Well, it's time for us to believe it. It hurts so much inside. Now she'll go her way, and I'll go mine. Tomorrow we'll meet the same place, the same time. Me and Mrs. Jones, Mrs. Jones, Mrs. Jones, Mrs. Jones. Got a thing going on. Be extra careful. We can't afford to build our hopes up too high. I wanna meet and talk with you at the same place, the same cafe, the same time. And we're gonna hold hands like we used to. We're gonna talk it over, talk it over.
Have you thought about hosting your own radio show? If so, visit our website at sensible64.wix.com/sayyourpiecenetwork. That's sensible64.wix.com/sayyourpiece, P-I-E-C-E, network. You're listening to Through the Eyes of the Black Woman.
All right, you guys, we are back here with Through the Eyes of the Black Woman on your Say Your Piece Radio Network. Again, my name is Salita, and I'm the host. Now, you guys, I'm excited. First of all, I want to say to you, Happy Black History Month and Happy Valentine's Day. Okay, we're going to basically tonight talk mainly about Black history. Okay? And we've got to find out the origin of Black history. Where did it come from, and who brought it to our attention? Now, it says that in 1915, and you tell me if you know this name, his name was Carter G. Woodson. He founded the Association for the Study of Negro Life and History and sought to expand the understanding of Black history beyond slavery. Now, keep in mind, we didn't have a history. We didn't have a significance. We weren't important. So these things were not discussed. What began as a week-long celebration that coincided with the birthdays of Frederick Douglass and Abraham Lincoln has developed into a highly anticipated month of events, television programs, headlines, and lectures that connect the trails and the triumphs of African Americans to all the people of the community. From the beginning, Carter G. Woodson was of the opinion that a lot of Black people did not have a great enough appreciation of who they were because they didn't know what they had accomplished. But today, Black people care more about history than any other people in America. The the fact of the matter is Americans don't care about history at all. It's true in general, Americans don't know the basics of the nation's history. In a 2009 national survey by the American Revolution Center, more Americans could identify with Michael Jackson as the person who wrote and sang the song Beat It than could identify the Bill of Rights as a part of the U.S. Constitution. It says, now, do you understand how important it is for us to recognize who we are, where we came from? Is that important to you? Because it's important to me. And I always try to stress that to all people, not just young people, but to a lot of grown folks, because a lot of grown folks don't know. It says, Left Behind in 2001, which some says ushered into a period of teaching to the test. If it didn't appear on a standardized test, it didn't get taught in many schools. And you know, guys, that is so much true. That is so true. It says, consequently, some fear students graduating from high school today may know how to pass a test, but lack of knowledge that makes them well-rounded citizens. You know, you don't have an understanding of the knowledge that you need in order to be able to communicate with other people. Anybody can pass a test if they put their mind to it. But after the test, how do you survive after the test? If you want to call in at 347-677-1749, that's 347-677-1749 with any comments as we talk about African-American history, black history, where it came from, and who thought it was significant to us. And the name is, I can't remember the guy's name, that quick, see? Carter G. Woodson is the name. Okay, it says, consequently, some peer students graduating from high school today may know how to pass a test, but the lack of knowledge that makes them well-rounded citizens. Among children, according to the 2010 National Report Card presented by the National Center of Education Statistics, only 20% of fourth graders, 17% of eighth graders, and 12% of 12th graders perform at or above proficient levels, meaning they obtain more knowledge than basic levels in U.S. history, which really doesn't mean that much, you guys. I'm just telling you like it is. It doesn't mean that much. In a land where history is not deemed as important, how does an organization based on the ideal that history, specifically black history, is of the utmost importance, stay relevant? African Americans are the only ones who really tell the story of American history on a consistent basis. Wow, I didn't know that. It says, we promote American history in a serious way. One of the downsides of the age in which we live is that new media favors the talking head, the person, the celebrity who can send out a tweet. There's a way in which no matter how much tech we have, until people meet with people, the problems we have will not be addressed. We're not going to tweet our issues away. It's only going to change with human-to-human contact. So we have to understand that we have to interact with each other in order for this main problem or this significant problem to be taken care of, which we don't connect with each other. We'd rather talk over the computer or over the phone. And, I mean, that's how we do. We don't want to sit face-to-face and talk to people. It's much more convenient. You're not taking me out of my personal space. I'm not taking you out of your personal space. So we're comfortable talking to each other over either the computer, the Internet, or, you know, over the phone. We're comfortable because we don't have to leave our homes to sit and talk with you. Okay? Let's see. Okay. It says the mission of AFSLA, is to promote, research, preserve, and disseminate information about Black culture to the world. This organization publishes 3 journals on African American life and is housed at Howard University. Let's see. It says, you can't celebrate Black history without American history and vice versa, says Scott. This is the guy who wrote the article. I'm sorry. Unless they think that our freedom came out of a box, then not through struggle, then you know that it was through an experience. You can't understand the state of America without understanding the struggles between Blacks and whites. Okay? We don't want to make it relevant. To a certain extent, it's not important. I don't know why. You guys, we are getting ready to take another break, and we shall return. This is Salita with Through the Eyes of the Black Woman on the Say Your Peace Radio Network, and we shall return.
Yes, I'm sitting right here, waiting for you, my dear, wondering if you ever gonna show me. I don't know if you're gonna show, my darling, I got to go, but nevertheless, I said, you gotta be waiting.
Eyes of the Black Woman.
Okay, we are back, and we were discussing, or I was reading an article about the history of Black history. And I stopped where it says, you can't understand the state of America without understanding the struggles between blacks and whites. Every year since 1926, the year of the first Black History Celebration, ALSA has also set the theme for the month. This year's theme is At the Crossroads of Freedom and Equality, the Emancipation Proclamation and the March on Washington. This year marks the 150th anniversary of Lincoln's signing of the Emancipation Proclamation and the 50th anniversary of the historical 1963 March on Washington. Excuse me. These events are like parables because the lessons we learned from them are simple but very potent and powerful. Freedom did not come to us with a stroke of a pen. We had to strike out and search for our freedom. The lessons from these events and the act of striking out and demanding freedom have played a key role in events as recent as the election of Barack Obama. We've witnessed ourselves on the verge of disenfranchisement. It stunk of the need of people of African descent to stand up for the rights to make sure they always have those rights. As Black History Month begins, so does the busy season, which includes countless events and culminates with the lunch. Okay, they're talking about lunch in Washington. However, the goals of the organization will remain the same, and they approach as they approach their centennial in 2015. Excuse me, you guys. My goal is to lay foundation so association is able to sustain itself for another 100 years. This is the guy named Seth Scott that they interviewed. That means engage the community in a better way to make history increasingly relevant. Okay. Very, very interesting. And then also, I need to tell you what I'm reading, and I should have said that from the get-go. I'm reading from the Alexandria News Weekly, and it's the black-owned, the only black-owned newspaper here in this area. I'm just, like, amazed at what goes on in what's going on in the statistics that are being used. You guys, it's very relevant about our history. It's very relevant that we keep up with it. We know where we came from, how we came from it, and why we're here now. We're going to talk about, Thursday, February the 7th, which we missed, was considered National Black HIV/AIDS Awareness Day. I didn't know that. It says Thursday, February 7th, we'll observe the National Black HIV/AIDS Awareness Day. And according to activists, there is plenty that African Americans need to observe. There are more than 1.1 million people living with HIV/AIDS in the United States, including more than 510,000 African Americans. It has been 31 years since the Center for Disease Control made the public aware of what HIV/AIDS is, and we're still seeing black community disproportionately impacted. So do you think maybe there's a conspiracy theory to impact us with AIDS, or we just got a lot of irresponsible people? What you think? Let me know. 347-677-1749. 347-677-1749. Now, excuse me. It says although blacks represent only 12% of the U.S. population, they account for 44% of new cases of HIV every year, and 44% of those living with HIV, according to the CDC. Black women account for 64% of all new AIDS among women. Most African-American females are infected through heterosexual relations. So that should tell you that we as African-American women are not protecting ourselves. And we're dealing with these men, and it has to be, these men who are on a down low. If the women are being infected through heterosexual relationships, that means that the guy is playing both ends of the candle. That's what that means. It says, although black teens represent only 15% of all U.S. teenagers, they account for 70% of new AIDS diagnoses among teens. 70%. What are we doing to our children? Why are these numbers so staggering? I'm just amazed at these numbers that are so staggering in here. My God. Then it says that the rate of diagnosis of AIDS among adults was the highest among black, gay, and bisexual men. Younger men, 13 through 29, accounted for 60% of the new HIV infections among black, gay, and bisexual men, compared to 28% among whites. So, again, do we have problem with protection? That is a question I want someone to answer me. Are we having problems with using protection, or do we have a death wish? I mean, to me, that's what it sounds like. You have a death wish. Each time you sleep with someone unprotected, that's a death wish. Do you understand that? So do you really value your life? Because obviously, according to this, you don't. It says we're looking at young population of gay men and young black women, mainly of childbearing age, who are most impacted. And you know what? That could be a way to stop us from being, I mean, continue having babies. I mean, you got your gay men and you got the women at the childbearing age that's got AIDS. Why keep having kids in the midst of you, you know, contracting these diseases? I'm trying to figure that out, but that's what it says. It says, excuse me, let's see. They did not grow up seeing the horrors of HIV and AIDS impacted in the early 80s, late 70s, and into the 90s. They did not see the fights to bring their attention to the forefront, and the absence of that feeds into this sense of complexity. So that means they're saying that these young people don't know the history, again, of where AIDS came from and how it impacted in the 70s, 80s, and into the 90s, the people that it did and how many people were, you know, died of AIDS. And there is, it is a horrible death. In 2008, HIV was the third leading cause of death for African-American women and the sixth leading cause of death for black men ages 25 to 44. Fields adds, and this is one of the ladies who wrote, who was, let me see, Ms. Fields is who? I'm sorry, you guys, I'm trying to figure out who she was. It just says Ms. Fields, it doesn't say who she was. That makes me mad. Oh, her name is Virginia Fields. She's the president and CEO of the National Black Leadership Commission on AIDS. Okay, she says people believe that all they have to do is pop a pill and they will get cured. There is no cure yet. Let me stress this. There is no cure for AIDS at this time. Although medical advances now allow HIV-positive people to maintain a higher quality of life longer than ever before, Fields is right. There is no cure for HIV. Now, it says, despite the fact that those who get treated for the virus can significantly reduce the likelihood of transmitting it to others, 72% of those living with HIV are not keeping the virus under control through treatment. So that means that they're ignoring their treatment. We're going to stop there. I'm going to take another break, and we're going to come back and continue this. This is very interesting, and I didn't notice that when I was reading the paper this morning. But this is a very interesting thing, and how you want to know how it ties into Black history, we'll be back, and I'll tell you why.
Every way I can, gonna give you all of me. and say, make love to you right now, that's all I want to do. I know you need it, girl, and you know I need it too, cause I found what the world is searching for. Here, right here, my dear, I don't have to look no more. And all my days I've hoped and I pray for someone just like you. Make me feel the way you do. Never, never gonna give you up. I'm never, ever gonna stop. Not the way I feel about you, girl, I just can't live without you. I'm never, ever gonna quit, cause quitting just ain't my stick. I'm gonna stay right here with you and do all the things you want me to. Whatever you want, girl, you got it. And whatever you need, I don't wanna see you without it. You've given me much more than words could ever say. And oh my dear, I'll be right here until my dying day. I don't know just how to say all the things I feel. I just know that I love you so, and it gives me such a thrill. Cause I find what this world is searching for. Yeah, right here, my dear, I don't have to look no more. And all my days I hope and I pray for someone just like you. Make me feel the way you do. I'm never, never gonna give you. I'm never ever gonna stop. Stop the way I feel about you. Girl, I just can't live without you. I'm never ever gonna quit, cause quitting just ain't my stick. Gonna stay right here with you. Do all the things you want me to. Oh, I'm never gonna give you up. I'm never ever gonna stop.
Thank you.
We are back here on Through the Eyes of the Black Woman with your host, Salita, on the Say Your Peace Radio Network. And out there to my listeners, I want to thank you guys for listening in. If you have any comments, you can call us in at 347-677-1749. That's 347-677-1749. Okay. We're talking about Black history. But we're also talking about AIDS, because I told you February the 7th was HIV AIDS Awareness Day, which I didn't know, and I didn't know these statistics, these astounding statistics that are very, 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 very important. Okay, it says, we said that despite the fact that those who get treated for the virus can significantly reduce the likelihood of transmitting it to others, 72% of those living with HIV are not keeping the virus under control through treatment. So that means that 72% of people out there with HIV don't have it under control. I think a lot of it has to do with the medicine and how expensive they are. And also the ideal that out of those 72%, they're not only aren't they not getting treated, they're spreading it continually. It says the Act Against AIDS Leadership Initiative, a partnership between the CDC and minority organizations and the Black AIDS Institute based in Los Angeles, believes the Affordable Care Act will help lessen the disparities between those in and out of care while living with HIV. The full implementation of the Affordable Care Act will ensure that HIV-positive people have access to the care and treatment they need to live full lives, says Alicia McKinley Beach. She is the Director of Stakeholder Engagement at the Black AIDS Institute. Implementation, the Affordable Care Act in its entirety is, however, just one of the ways the Black AIDS Institute believes the African American community and all communities affected by the virus can really work toward ending the epidemic. Now, do you believe that there is an ending to this epidemic? I can't say it is. I can't say it's not. But it is something we need to think about. It also says in their latest report, Light at the End of the Tunnel, State of AIDS in Black America, released on National Black AIDS Day, the Black AIDS Institute lays out a 5-point plan they believe will help stop the virus in its tracks. Plans include retooling African-American organizations to better address the evolving needs of those living with and fighting against contracting HIV and AIDS and increasing the demand for treatment. So obviously there is a breakdown somewhere. if they have to demand treatment, I mean, demand any type of help with treatment. One major point recommends supporting those living with the disease to come out and disclose their status. A part of that disclosure is having people who are HIV positive to share their stories and help maintain a support system, says McKinley Beach, which is a great idea. We also know that those who disclose are more likely to be in treatment, which makes them less likely to transmit the disease. In an effort to increase disclosure, the Black AIDS Institute has also developed Positively Out, a program to help people living with the disease get the tools they need to know when and who to tell their status, which I think is very important. Despite all the efforts to educate and uplift HIV, still remains a serious issue for African American communities, one that can't be deemed important just one day out of the year. That needs to be year-round. In the December 2012 CDC report, the rate of incident among African American women have decreased by 21%, although among all young men who have sex with men, the rate has gone up by 22%. Okay, now that's good news. It's decreased by 21%, but it's up by 22% when it comes to African-American men. It says young Black, gay, and bisexual men now account for more than infections than any other subgroup. It says it doesn't mean that we need to stop being diligent. Doesn't mean we should take our eyes off the ball. There's much more work to do, and each one of us can do a part in taking on that work. So that is a positive thing. Even though we started out with a negative version of it, it turned out to be something positive. And it's very important that we know this. This is part of who we are. You know, we have to take heed to what's going on with it. Okay, now, let's see. There was another article that I was looking at that caught my eye. Very, very interesting. And let's talk about, when we talk about Black history, let's talk about President Obama. And you guys, I'm going to say this about the president. And I haven't been talking about him a lot. I haven't been being on that cheerleading team for him. And I think a lot has to do with once you open your eyes to a lot of things, you're either going to continue to walk blindly into the path of destruction or you're going to walk away and reassure yourself that, you know what, this is the way I truly want to go. Not to say that the President of the United States is down a dark path. I'm just saying a lot of things that, you know, we're crying out for him to recognize, and it's like he's not looking at us. As you know, he is considered a lame duck president at this time, so he can do whatever he really wants to a certain extent. He just passed the Immigration Reform Act. That doesn't help us none because, you know, we're Americans, you know. So I'm trying to figure out what is it that he's going to pay more attention to. You know, reparation would be something nice to talk about, but, you know, pardon some of our African-American historical people would be another version of helping us out. And kind of just looking at the disparities around America when it comes to Black people, period. Be encouraging and engaging. The idea that they begged him to go to Chicago with all the people that were losing in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
He hasn't done it. For the funeral of the young lady who died that had participated in a event during the inauguration, she's dead, and he sent Michelle instead of him to the funeral. Amazing. Okay. those are just the things that I don't want to say nitpicking about, but those are the things that I noticed. You guys, you hear that noise? That's my clock. I don't know why it's doing that. Okay, Obama slammed for lack of cabinet diversity, and I remember reading this, I think it was last week, yeah. The CBC member says Obama disrespects blacks. And it's sort of almost like a continuation on this conversation, and it's by, this one was by George E. Curry, and this one right here is by Freddie Allen. And he says that President Obama has been accused of everything from not being born in America to secretly being a Muslim. But the most surprising and accurate accusation is that the nation's first black president has a cabinet less diverse than the Bill Clinton and George Bush had. And unlike his first term, blacks are not biting their tongue about their disappointment in President Obama. He's not being held accountable for his policies or his appointment, says Mary Frances Berry, a history professor at University of Pennsylvania and former chairwoman of the United States Commission on Civil Rights. In politics, the squeaky wheel gets the most oil. And there are plenty of the squeaky wheels in President Obama's second term. Representative Charles Rangel, which is a Democrat of New York, says on NBC that the criticism of President Obama's lack of diversity in his cabinet is embarrassing as hell. Whoa. He explained, as it's the first term, you could see people got to know who is around that qualified in order to get the job. No. He's saying number one. I had thought, and maybe it's so, that it could be the Harvard problem where people just know each other, trust each other, and women and minorities don't get a chance to rub elbows and their reputations and experiences not known. Even if they were the case, if that were the case, Barry states, that still wouldn't be an acceptable excuse. Black people go to Harvard, too, she said. For example, Massachusetts Governor DeVell Patrick graduated from Harvard Law School in 1982, cum laude. Blacks graduating from the nation's most prestigious universities is not a recent phenomenon. Historian and civil rights, I got to go inside, you guys, sorry. Let's go inside the paper. Oh, I'm sorry. It says, activist W.E. Du Bois received his doctoral degree from Harvard in 1895. William Monroe Trotter, the crusading editor of the Boston Guardian, graduated from Harvard the same year magna cum laude and earned a Phi Beta Kappa key. Du Bois and Trotter were among the founders of the Niagara Movement in 1905, the forerunner of the NAACP. Man, didn't know that. It was called the Niagara Movement. More important, an Ivy League degree is not the ultimate measure of one's ability to serve in a top position, said Berry, who graduated from historically black Fisk University in Nashville and Yale University Law School. While Rangel speculates that Obama might have had few black contacts beyond his Harvard and Chicago inner circle during his first term, Representative Alcee Hastings, which was a conversation they had last week, the Congressional Black Caucus vetted and sent the names of 61 potential appointees to the White House that were qualified to serve in his second term. Speaking at the National Newspaper Publisher Association Midwinter Convention in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, Hastings said not one of the 61 was elected, not one. So that causes for a lot of disappointment, you guys, with the president. So by right, people have a right to comes to him being more diversified and him recognizing us. And, you know, eventually we get angry and we allow things to happen because we are the power of the people. We allow things to happen and we don't want to be held accountable for it because, you know, hey, this is the only way we can get his attention. Let's do this. And that's what's happening in a lot of instances. I'm hoping that you guys learned something tonight with me. We're down to 2 minutes, less than 3 minutes right now. But I want to say this. Come March 18th, I want to do a couple announcements. I'm going to stop right there, and we can continue this tomorrow. I'm trying to see if I had a, what's the name, scheduled. No, I don't. So tomorrow we'll talk more about what's going on in the Black history, since we want to get that, and then we'll get back to the Black love thing. I want to say this. We will, March the 18th, I will be starting my writing course online, which means that I'm going to be doing a class about writing a book online, and it's called So You Want to Write and Publish a Book in 90 Days. And it's a writing online course that you can take. And I'm really looking forward to it. I'm excited. I'm ready to roll. I'm soliciting everyone I can solicit to become part of the class. And if you know anybody, all I'm asking for you to have is access to a computer and the internet, a piece of paper and a pen. And it does cost money, $25 for the first month. And even though it's a 90-day course, I think $25 is suffice for to get started on. At the end of the class, you will be able to have a manuscript completed and ready to roll because a lot of the work is going to be on you. So I'm really looking forward to that. That's going to be March the 18th. We still have some more stuff we have to work out on it. But I'm looking forward to doing that. So I want to say to you guys, thank you for listening in to Through the Eyes of the Black Woman with your host, Leta McCall, on the Say Your Peace Radio Network. And I want to again say thank you, and I want to say good night. Bye-bye.
Has been another episode of Through the Eyes of the Black Woman with your host, Salita. We want to thank you for listening in and stay tuned.